Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons?
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery, a Star Trek Discovery podcast from the very embarrassed makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
How you doing today, Adam?
You know how there's a Maker magazine?
Uh-huh.
I wish there was Embarrassed Maker magazine and a family of products for creatives who are embarrassed by what they've created.
Yeah, some kind of a festival where we can show off the things we're embarrassed to have made.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
That would be great. This is a show that we've decided to keep as a Tuesday show, despite the fact that Star Trek Discovery now comes out on Thursdays rather than Sundays. We've got a little guff for that.
Who's giving us guff?
I don't know. People saying like, wow, it's surprising that you guys are waiting this long to put up your thoughts.
I'm not even trying to hear any guff anymore, man.
Yeah. No more guff, okay?
I mean, people are welcome to guff in our general direction, but I'm not trying to hear that. I'm muting the guff, Ben.
I'm just saying, we're trying to make the best show we can, and we have discovered, no pun intended, that it takes a little time to do that.
It's a free show. We owe these people nothing.
You know somebody that we do owe something, Adam?
Who?
Is our buddy J.K. Woodward.
Oh, yeah?
He just sent me a page from his most recent comic book for IDW Publishing. It's a Captain Picard story. And on page 10 of this, you and I are seen to defend Picard in some kind of phaser fight.
Hmm?
And we both take bullets in the back. So
he like actually a had sucker.
He actually had us like send in some photographs of ourselves making various facial expressions, like awesome action facial expression, and then getting one in the back facial expression.
Yeah,
this is like one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen.
So he sent you the original artwork for it. This is not the comic that he sent you. He sent you the real thing.
He sent me the real thing. Yeah, I have.
Wow.
It's hand penciled and hand painted.
Wow, that's gorgeous. You wanna Jackie and Lori me that?
I will. Yeah, let me do that right now.
Hard to believe that you and I are after this going to be cemented into canon, though. That comic will come out the day after this episode does, so I guess there's still time to recall all of the shipments and burn them like they should be.
Yeah, so he gave me some great resources if you'd like to go out and get the comic. Yeah, so this is from the IDW 2020 Star Trek comic, and it is on the verge of being out. You know, I think the strong encouragement here is go buy it in your local comic shop. And there's actually a website, comicshoplocator.com, that will help you find one if you're not already aware of where your closest comic shop is.
Yeah.
You know, as you board the podcast, take a look around for your local comic shop. It may be behind you. but we use that Comixology app sometimes on this show, and it'll be on that. And he said he's even going to send us some like nice printouts of the pages that we're on. So maybe we'll do like a giveaway or something. But I just really wanted to say thank you to JK.
Yeah.
And that was super duper cool of him to send it.
JK Woodward's a great friend of the show and friend of DeSoto. So thanks a lot. Thanks for sending Ben this beautiful rendering of the both of us. I'm holding out for the next one, Ben, that depicts us mid-coitus. In JK's defense, he asked which one of us he should send it to, and I said it should go to you because you're more the foreground actor here. I think it's only right. If I were making artwork of us, I would put myself in the background too.
Yeah, and I think that there was a second page that he may have sold to somebody on like a Star Trek cruise or something.
Oh.
But JK is also on a Star Trek Discovery podcast of his own.
It's true.
Called Go Trek Yourself. So if you're not sated by the greatest discovery and want to check out another Star Trek Discovery podcast every week, I would highly recommend you start with that one.
If you're out there bang-banging disco pods,
yeah,
can't do any better than those two.
Haven't heard enough opinions about the show.
Yeah. I've got opinions, Ben. I'm full of them.
Yeah? Dump them out. I want to hear those opinions, Adam.
Star Trek Discovery, Season 2, Episode 2. It's called New Eden. Those two words kind of blend together.
New Eden.
Yeah. I'm going to open up a pot store called New Eden. For newcomers to vaporizing marijuana.
Wow, that's that'll be great.
That is doomed to fail.
That's legal now, Adam.
I know. We open with Michael Burnham sharing what she found in Spock's quarters via Spock's audio log in what looks like the new ready room, because. When you're working on one of your smaller starships, you're gonna potentially want to knock down a wall. Make sure that you check for load-bearing walls and structures.
We've brought in some fashionable mid-century modern furniture to complement some of the more high-tech pieces of equipment scattered about the room.
To make yourself look more cultured, I like to use antiques. That way, people mistake your love of older objects as a personality.
I think that like one of the most interesting themes in this episode is what should you tell your boss?
Yeah.
And you know, Michael Burnham has had a patchy past with what should and should not be sent up the ladder to the boss. And I thought it was good that in this scene, like she's showing Pike exactly what she found. She's not keeping this under her hat. She's not doing some weird, I'm protecting Spock, so I'm not going to tell people that he knew about the red flashes before everyone else thing.
Right.
And Pike responds to her candor with some candor of his own. Spock is not on vacay finding himself. He has checked himself into a psychiatric hospital.
Right. It's the kind of hospital that will listen to your request to not tell your family members that you're there.
Right. Yeah. I don't know where that fits into the like HIPAA regulations, yeah. But maybe that's a thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. What's interesting about what's in the log is that Spock's had premonitions of these seven signals months ahead of the moment they appeared. And so they do a nifty bit of holograph masturbation in which they like throw up Spock's rendering and compare it to the actual Starfield rendering of their locations. And they match up pretty perfectly in a spooky kind of way.
This puts some urgency in the mission. They're like having a heart to heart about what it's like to grow up in a in a family that is not super close, a confusing household in Pike's words. A stretch to say that having a dad who had two different careers simultaneously is anything like growing up as a human in a Vulcan household with a half-human brother.
After your parents have been murdered? Yeah, like, I love that Pike's trying to find common cause with her, but, like, he doesn't really have that.
Yeah, she seems to be winding up for calling him out on the carpet for his false equivalency when they get called up to the bridge. More red flashes are being detected. They come up with a quick and dirty way to get a fix on this thing. And it turns out they're going to have to fire up the spore drive to get to it because it's like over 100,000 light years away. It's a Voyager amount of distance from where they are.
Almost equal to the leap that they are considering making is the leap in credulity of so much time being spent tearing down the spore drive and remaking the engineering section back into its pre-spore drive state, and that it takes about 20 minutes to set it back up again.
Yeah, they did say something in the last episode that they were, like, converting the ship back, right?
Yeah.
Huh.
Ton of malingerers in that engineering crew, I think. just sort of hanging around, not doing their jobs.
I was a little surprised that Jet Reno wasn't in the engineering department. I guess she must have gone on the Enterprise at the end of the last episode.
Yeah, maybe.
Speaking of what to tell your boss, Pike kind of justifies using the spore drive, despite like how dangerous we know it is now, as a kind of like, we'll ask forgiveness, not permission kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't seem like they're far enough away that he should be making a call like that just kind of on the fly. But he definitely does not blow in a call to Starfleet Command to check in on whether this is cool. And so they send Stamets down there to, like, get in the Spock box and get plugged in. It seems like they're going to be off to the races, but we get a brief scene where Stamets expresses to Tilly, like, how much fear he has of the kind of emotional ramifications of doing Spore Drive right now because of his interaction with a beyond the grave Hugh Culber in, you know, toward the end of last season when he was doing the dozens and dozens of jumps to kill the Klingon ship of the dead.
I love how he's given just enough time to express his concerns with the situation, but not enough time to reveal a conclusion. In that, and I think it serves this story in this episode particularly well because if given the choice between choosing a world where Dr. Culber exists and remaining on the Discovery where Dr. Culber is dead, he does not express what that choice would be if he were forced to make it. And that's kind of the core question of the episode, right? In what world do you want to live when confronted with a possible uncomfortable truth?
Yeah. But he dutifully agrees to do the jump. And
so does Pike. Like, this is breakneck speed exposition. Like, they explain what a spore drive is to Pike. Pike approves of its use, given his two-sentence description of it. Like, if they needed six episodes to describe what this technology was in season one.
Yeah.
And Pike just gets it naturally.
There's a point where Saru is like, hey, do you have any more questions about this? And he's like, no, not really.
Yeah.
He almost turns to camera and says, and maybe Rob can just drop the audio in here.
Be bold, be brave, be courageous. Black alert.
Get a thesaurus, Pike.
Yeah. It's like when they tell you that tampering, disabling, or destroying the lavatory smoke detector is strictly forbidden.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't need the second two because they're covered by the first.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought the third part was going to be Starfleet.
Yeah.
Or be best. What about be best? That's just as nonsensical as what Pike is saying here. Pike's like, I don't care, do you?
They do the jump. Pike kind of creams his jeans, and they are in orbit over a planet that has some
some like Saturn-like rings, except for they're kind of all in different directions around this planet. They have not organized themselves into one ring system.
Pretty beautiful looking.
Yeah, cool planet.
Stamets storms out of the Spock box, not feeling really great about what just happened, but Tilly's attempts to interrogate this moment are cut short because he's gone.
Yeah, and I wonder if we will return to this moment later, because it seems like it could be that he's just disappointed that he didn't see Hugh in in his, you know, jump fugue or whatever it's called, but it could be that he did and is upset by that.
Yeah, it's a scene that's pregnant with something. We don't know what yet.
Anyways, they start scanning this planet and they discover that it is rotten with humans. This, despite being in the Beta Quadrant and an impossible distance from the core of the Federation, and in their survey, they discover that these humans are living a very primitive, like pre-industrial lifestyle.
Right, a no electricity lifestyle, even.
Yeah, and so like this is going to be an away mission, but Prime Directive will be in play despite the fact that they're visiting a humans planet, which is a fun, is a very like hard Star Trek premise, you know?
Right, especially when put in opposition with a couple of statements made by crew people on the Discovery, Pike being one of them. Pike says that they don't believe they've been brought here by accident as they prepare to go on the away mission.
Yeah, he calls up Arthur C. Clarke's third law, which is that any alien like sufficiently advanced will be indistinguishable from a god. And then in comes Kevin, and he's like, "Oh, did somebody refer to my existence? Because I am very advanced and indistinguishable from a god. So if I do anything bad, don't think that you are in a position to judge me, because your morality just isn't going to be up to the task."
You know, I don't like to talk about myself in this way, but people have called me angelic from time to time.
I am stunningly beautiful, I am told, by Rashaan, who, now that I think about it, is kind of my own creation and therefore subject to my own whims. I guess I'm kind of realizing that I have a bit of an ego problem, and that's something I should probably be working on, but you have no psychologist to fit my mind.
We cut to the shuttle bay where Tilly is working the asteroid fragment problem, and in so doing, gets really fucked up in the process.
Yeah.
And lest you were unaware of who was directing this episode, the god shot at the end... where Tilly's been thrown into the cargo, and our camera is shooting down from up top. It is one John Frakes at the helm of this one. And we get a couple of reminders of his presence during the ep.
Yeah, and I really loved the camera work in this episode. It's like he really knows how to live it up with the camera, with directing the camera. Like, he loves like putting it upside down or you know, shooting through stuff. He's great.
Yeah, he loves rotating the camera around his characters as they think.
So the away team is Captain Pike, Commander Burnham, and Lieutenant Owoshakun, who grew up in a Luddite collective. So her parents must just be fucking horrified by her career decisions.
I love how she's given a nickname later, Ben. It's Owo.
What
a great nickname.
I missed that.
Tilly calls her Owo later on.
Owo is a great nickname. Fuck.
Yeah, it's fucking solid. She's a crew person whose unique experience makes her suitable to go visit these people.
I think that her experience should have been enough to have her tell them, let's not beam down right in the middle of town, because that could just blow our cover right off the bat.
But many decisions in this episode seem based on time, though, and how little of it there is to tell this story in the confines of what is now a 40-some-minute episode of Star Trek, unlike the first episode of Season 2, which was the full hour.
they get to town and they go into this church, which is the location from which the distress signal that they picked up is coming. And like the first episode, the red beacon signal that they're hunting for, you know, is nowhere to be found when they arrive. They keep not getting there in time, it seems like. They find this holy book that sort of looks like it's just a series of ransom notes. The church is like, you know, modeled on a colonial New England church design, but it clearly incorporates tenets of lots and lots of different religions. And it's good that Pike's father was a professor of comparative religion and that Michael Burnham is totally read up on all of Earth's holy texts, because they decode this pretty quickly, despite the fact that nobody in the landing party has ever been in a church.
I really love Sonequa Martin-Green's line reading of her familiarity with religious texts, because it almost perfectly neutralizes her feelings about them.
Right.
I'm familiar with the text of Earth's religions.
Long time ago, I was asked if I had any pets, and this was back at a time when I only had a cat with my wife.
Uh-huh.
And at this time, I wasn't really a fan of cats. And so my answer was, there is a cat that lives in my house. Like, that's the kind of neutrality that Michael Burnham states her familiarity with the subject here. It's really funny to me.
Yeah.
It's almost hostile neutrality, you know?
Yeah. I want you to know everything about how I feel this in the way I say it.
Yeah. It isn't long before they're confronted by someone from the town that they visited. He's Jacob, who asks why the hell they aren't out in the fields with the rest of them.
Yeah, and I guess that's like, it kind of reminded me of that episode of Deep Space Nine where Sisko and O'Brien have to work the fields.
Yeah, I was looking all around for the punishment box this ep, that's for sure. Especially after they're introduced to Mother.
The All-Mother.
Yeah, who's the matriarch of the whole town.
They're like, All-Mother? What is this? Horizon Zero Dawn? The medium successful PlayStation 4 game?
I was wondering if Jacob was going to feel guilty for being in the presence of a couple of females away from Mother in this scene, which is why he's in such a hurry to take them to her, right? Can't be in a room with these people.
Yeah, yeah. Mother will be very cross.
I was a little confused. Like, we know the town is called New Eden, but sometimes the planet is called New Eden, and sometimes the planet is called Terra Elysium.
Well, I think Terra Elysium is like Latin for Eden. It would be like heaven, earth, right? Or earth, heaven. Or
so it's
like
all
that.
Different ways of saying the same thing.
I guess not, because Eden and heaven are not the same thing as Elliot
as
Kalin
Star Trek
points
5.
Out in our in our Star Trek 5 episode.
Yeah.
I guess I was thinking the planet they call Terra Elysium and this particular settlement they call New Eden.
That's what I took it to mean.
Because they say like, oh, is this your first visit to New Eden? Under the understanding that the away team are actually just travelers that are coming from a different part of the planet.
Right. We're going to cross-cut back and forth between the A and the B story. The B story, it's becoming clear, is going to be the Tilly story this ep, and her interest in putting her own life in danger, something for which she is confronted by Dr. Pollard and Saru in Six Bay.
Yeah, and she's just been talking to another low-ranking officer. I don't really know if there's like a way to determine what somebody's rank is on this show by looking at their uniform. Are there pips on the command badge on the communicator badges?
But you never get close enough to May to really decipher how many dots she's got on it.
Yeah, and she's got like May's got like a West Indian accent or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
She's standing there talking to Tilly when Saru and the doctor come in, and Saru really just lays into Tilly, and everybody clears out of the room, and it winds up becoming an opportunity for Saru to kind of give some give some advice about, you know, don't make the entire show your responsibility.
I thought the interaction between Saru and Tilly, as compared to the one between Michael Burnham and Pike, was fairly telling, because Saru's able to make his case based on a number, like they have a history together, right? Saru and Tilly do. And so Saru's attempt at creating a professional intimacy with Tilly is right and confirmed and based on a relationship that we're familiar with. It works in a way that it doesn't with Pike and Michael Burnham so far, because Pike's just asking her to trust him.
Right.
And she doesn't, because they don't have a relationship. Like, Pike's open door policy doesn't mean much unless there's trust there. And the only way to build trust is through experience.
Right. So the planet is in big trouble. Some of the rings are starting to come apart, and they're full of nasty radioactive stuff that is going to start raining down through the atmosphere onto the planet and killing not only the OA team, but everybody else also. And that means they've got to think fast. But
Detmer's got like the scene from Terminator 2 where Linda Hamilton's hanging on to the chain link fence. Like, I have a video of what's going to happen once these rocks rain down.
No!
Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun.
Saru's like, where did you get that, Detmer?
She's like, I have like a video art practice in my spare time.
Stamets is able to watch it using his VR device. It's totally horrifying to him because he's in it.
But this is a ticking clock, and it's something that nobody on the planet is aware of, which is big trouble.
Yeah, it makes it hard because like there's so much interference. You can't just beam them back up, and you can't just send a shuttle down. There are complications involved.
Back on the planet, the OA team breaks into the basement of the church, which is kind of like a mad scientist workshop full of all this old dead tech that the people that live here still have. Because the backstory on these people is that during the Third World War, they were taking refuge in this church while nuclear bombs were raining down on them, and this Red Angel character like saved them and spirited them away to this planet. And so their religion has grown up around worshiping this figure and like rejecting technology and like living on the land in a primitive style.
This show really art directs well scenes like this. Scenes yeah. like the church basement, scenes like Harry Mudd's ship, the bridge of his ship specifically.
Oh yeah, in the Short Treks episode.
Yeah, they really do a great job dressing these locations to make them look
right.
lived in. I think
right.
it's one of the best things that this show does.
They're down there, they're looking for the beacon that that you know led them to understand that there were humans down here, and Jacob comes back and he is onto them. He's actually not as whipped up into the all mother religion that all of his planet mates are whipped up into. His lineage is that of science, and mm-hmm. his family never believed this was a supernatural occurrence, and he believes that the away team are people from off world and have been drawn to this place by his beacon. Like, this is something his family has been maintaining for hundreds of years. And in order to prove his theory to the All Mother and everybody else, he throws a stun grenade at the away team. And when they wake up, they're like trapped in the cellar. So, fortunately, Owosukun has some skills at him.
Owosukun, making life-saving inventions out of household materials. Owosukun, getting in and out of ultra-sticky situations. Owosukun, that girl's a friggin' genius. Owosukun!
Well played.
So they get out of there.
I don't know if it matters, but the character we've been calling Jacob is credited as Joseph on IMDb, and I wonder if the name Joseph is too loaded, given the religious connotation of that name, and which is why he's known as Jacob on the show and referred to as Jacob on the show.
Or maybe the person that filled out the IMDb was only half paying attention.
Yeah, this always gets me into trouble. I refer to the IMDb and it's frequently wrong. It makes me look like an idiot. So stupid.
I mean, it's okay. I look like an idiot on this show too. Back up on the ship, Tilly is rocking a Diane von Furstenberg style hospital gown. Uh-huh. And she's in six bay with May talking through this puzzle of how are they going to get all of these radioactive rocks not to hit the planet. And in kind of batting the ball back and forth, they come up with the idea of using the asteroid fragment that's in the shuttle bay as kind of like a gravitational sink. Like it's super duper dense, so it'll make a strong enough gravitational field to attract all these rocks. And if they can kind of tow it using the Discovery's tractor beams, they can change the trajectory of these radioactive rocks. And they put this together. Like she runs up on the bridge in her wrap dress, and very quickly Detmer gets the message that she's going to have to do some fancy flying, and they do it.
This is lowest common denominator science, and I don't mean that disparagingly at all. I just mean that, like, there's real science happening here, and it is explained in such a way that makes it clear to anyone without a science background. Like,
right.
Like, you get it. Lots of gravity collects little things. By dropping this thing out of the Discovery poop chute, you're going to be able to affect some change to the movement of these objects.
And it's a fun payoff, right? Because I don't think in the last episode that we got anything to lead us to believe that asteroid fragment was super dense. But when the one, you know, piece the size of a 100-sided dice comes off of it when Tilly's collecting her core sample and crushes the table next to her, it really illustrates that case really well.
I like the order too, right? We're showing before telling. Like if you didn't get it from the show, we're going to tell you later. And then we're going to show you again.
Yeah.
Show, tell, show.
And it was, I thought it was a very fun sequence and a really like nice extended CG sequence with the ship doing this pull and then like spore driving out of the way before the rocks start breaking up. I loved it.
What Jacob has done in the time it took for Pike, Owo, and Burnham to escape the basement is showed Mother all the junk that they had in their bags.
Yeah.
And this junk is all the tech that they had. And Jacob's making the case that these people aren't from here at all. They're from the other Earth. And they were led to believe that OG Earth didn't exist.
Right. That it was destroyed in the war and that they're the only survivors and that like it's their responsibility to keeping the species alive is to not fall into the bad ways of technology. So the fact that Jacob has like any interest in technology at all is actually kind of anathema to what the All-Mother's teachings are.
This is the moment that really brings to a point the conflict between General Order 1 and what they're seeing on the planet's surface. Like, Jacob is imploring Michael Burnham to tell Mother that he's right, to confirm what he's saying. She never gets that opportunity because Pike jumps on a phaser grenade and gets taken back to the church to be patched up.
Right, and rather than being patched up, what we see is, All-Mother and Jacob busting through the door just as they're transported out of there.
Yeah.
And immediately, All-Mother interprets this as the spirit, like, you know, taking them away and doing some kind of miracle.
Right.
And it's, you can see that Jacob is pretty crushed by the way this has gone down.
I was crushed the way it went down on him. I thought it totally sucked for him.
Yeah.
It was heartbreaking to see that. But we're stacking success upon success, Ben, because like doing donuts on the Discovery, not only is that mission successful, Pike's going to live. He's going to have some sore ribs, but he got beamed off the surface just in time to save his life.
You asked earlier if there was anything I ought to tell you.
There is something that Michael Burnham has not told her boss, and that is that she saw this red angel when she was struggling with the glowing chunk of shrapnel in her leg on the asteroid in the past episode. And, you know, she had interpreted it as a hallucination, or at the very least as something that nobody would believe her when she told them. And so, like, you know, there's a moment in the beginning of the episode where it kind of almost looks like she's about to tell him about it and then kind of quickly changes her mind. And in this scene, it seems like she's, like, developed a level of trust with Pike and a level of common cause with him that she's willing to admit this.
Burnham just needed 30 more minutes to come to terms with the idea of telling him this.
Yeah. It's an interesting scene because it's, like, where they decide to go make a deal with Jacob. And it's amidst new context. And it's kind of a conversation that very much mirrors the Lorca maniacal rant about context is for kings, but it's by, like, two sane people having a conversation.
Right.
Which I really liked.
I thought for sure Pike was going to say context was for kings. Like, there's a little bit of a hitch in his verbal giddy-up in that moment.
And then it'd be like, dun 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 dun. And just, like, cutting in on Burnham's face as horror washes over it. He's like, let's make it a little darker in here. Long live the Empire.
In Tilly's quarters, she's doing a little bit of research, because at the conclusion of the Disco Donut mission, something doesn't quite hang together with this May character. Yeah. And so she's like, this May seems familiar with me and to me, but I need to do my own research. So Tilly goes back to her quarters and slams in a 8-track cassette of her old junior high yearbook. And the signatures in a junior high yearbook from this time period are holograms.
Yeah, like Tasha Yar funeral holograms. And,
yeah.
And she's got a young version of May Ahern, you know, wishing her well. And then Tilly's like, oh, Ahern, that's her last name. Computer, where does May Ahern live on this ship? Computer spits back that nobody under that name is currently stationed on the Disco.
And Computer was like, May Ahern disappeared on a night just like this one.
Until he goes, May Ahern is a ghost?
It sounded like a starship dropped off the Empire State Building.
So that remains unresolved at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of how they treated Jet Reno in the last episode. Like, seems like something is fishy going on with some of these characters, and maybe they know something that, you know, that we don't know.
This is a show after a season that is telling you that it's not going to resolve things episode to episode.
Right.
You just have to go into it ready for that.
You're never going to know what's a storyline that is part of the myth arc and what is a Monster of the Week storyline, and they're going to intertwine and commingle the entire time.
It felt effective in season one.
Yeah, yeah, and it feels very effective here. They go back to the workshop, or at least Pike does, and he does not... he doesn't change into civilian garb this time. He's in his captain's uniform, and he talks to Jacob, and they make a trade. Pike kind of reveals who he is and what he does, and then trades Jacob a long lasting power cell for the helmet cam of a soldier that was in that church when whatever went down went down.
Ben, I think you could probably articulate this better than I could. At least I hope so. But why does he do this? Why does he break the general order for Jacob by making this trade?
I think that he and Burnham both feel bad that they lied to Jacob's face when Jacob knew what was true. I mean, it seems like if somebody is aware of who you are and what you are, General Order Number One is complicated by that, right?
Right. If not compromised and dissolved.
Right. But also, like, they, like, what Michael Burnham makes the case for in our conversation with Pike is that the red beacons are potentially an existential threat to the Federation. And so one little violation of the Prime Directive is probably worth doing in order to save everybody's life.
Yeah, see, I saw this episode a couple of times, and I never thought they made a strong enough case that the existential element of their mission superseded General Order One here.
I know, and I think that it's, having seen trailers for this, I've heard the phrase, somebody is going to try and kill all life in the galaxy, get uttered in the trailers a bunch of times. And so I feel like it almost rests on you having gotten that piece of information.
The thing is, every time we see a red angel, it is just before a life is saved. You know?
Yeah.
So I'm getting mixed messages here. Hmm. And it doesn't appear like anyone in the Federation is.
Yeah, and there's that other element of, like, ascribing intentionality to everything that's happening. You know, like Pike says, like, oh, we were brought here, you know, and then Saru, like, takes that and runs with it when he's deciding what to do about the planet being destroyed.
Yeah.
Hard to know. But they make this trade. The church gets lit up and for what we understand to be the first time in a long time.
I think Jacob may have done these connections wrong because it is a Griswold amount of light coming out of this church. I don't think anyone's going to be happy going into that church at night.
Is that a unit of electricity, a Griswold of light?
Yeah.
We got a quiet little scene at the end where, alone in his ready room, Pike watches the video from the helmet cam. And I thought it was interesting how much the camera is facing away from the screen he's watching. It shows us a very little bit of some soldiers rushing people into this church. But for the most part, we're watching Pike's face, and then we cut back to a very brief glimpse of the angel character before the video cuts out.
That's the ep.
I thought these soldiers should have looked like those drug sniffing soldiers that Q plays in Encounter at Farpoint. I would have been really excited. Like, I hate that.
That would
episode,
have been a great callback. Yeah,
that would have been such an awesome callback. And so they just look like regular, like, modern soldiers from our perspective.
Yeah, yeah. Missed opportunity, Ben. Good call.
Oh well.
Did you like this episode?
I really did. Very fun Frakes directing. It felt very Star Trek-y, you know, like we pull up to a planet and do a mission at the planet and it makes us understand something new. I thought there were some, like, genuine moments of, like, earned comedy, you know, Tilly running around in the hallway was really funny to me. And I thought that it didn't ever get too bogged down in anything, you know, like it gives you everything you need to understand this story without dragging in any part. Cause we always watch Star Trek Discovery episodes twice before we record. And that's felt like a drag a couple of times, but, this did not. It was really fun to watch two times. I felt like I understood new things about it the second time I watched it through, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that first scene that May appears in and the way she's totally ignored by the doctor and Saru when they walk in, didn't occur to me the first time, but on the rewatch, I was like, oh yeah, like we get no indication that they're aware of her presence in that scene.
The show, I mean, that's baked into the show's DNA, begging you to rewatch it for the reward of those scenes.
Totally. Did you like the episode, Adam?
You know, like related to the rewatch element of it, I wonder if I'm going to feel very different about this episode 4 episodes from now. Because this is a show that, even before we got the premiere of season 2, stated the case that this was going to be a season about science versus faith. And the show right now is asking a lot of questions it's not going to answer because it's just episode two. But there's a real contemporary feeling ache to Jacob's circumstance in, you know, the conflict within him about the knowledge that he feels like he has and the ignorance of those who control his circumstances and the way he lives.
Yeah.
And it really made me think a lot about, and this is not, like, this is not the show where you and I argue these points, but, like, the difference between life and quality of life was something I thought a lot about here. And that's really what gets at the core of what General Order One is all about. And I never for a moment wavered from the from Burnham's side of this early on, which was like, these people are kin, these people are from Earth, like, keeping them in the dark about the circumstances is wrong.
Yeah.
I did feel like that, and I do feel like that. And it's what made Jacob's story a tragedy. When they just left him there with that big battery, it seemed sufficient for him to have been told he wasn't crazy about his feelings.
Yeah.
And to me, nothing is more insufficient than that. Like, they paid off his suspicions, but he's in prison now for the rest of his life, like, with this knowledge. He's surrounded by idiots who are willfully ignoring the truth around them. And I feel like that's a special kind of hell. And if they don't return here and find out how awful of a punishment that was for him, then I'm going to be disappointed. Because to end this episode on a high note, it's not true. Like, it's not a good ending, or a happy ending, I should say, for him.
The character Marasta in that episode, First Contact of TNG, when she discovers that, you know, life exists outside of their planet.
She gets to stay.
Yeah, she gets to go with the Enterprise.
Yeah.
And Saru got to go into space when he figured it out.
Yeah. This, what do they call it? Cafeteria Catholicism? Like, you just pick what you want from the buffet line. This buffet line of General Order One, like, it doesn't work for me.
I get the sense that this is not the last we're going to see of these people.
Yeah.
They really pregnantly left I believe we'll see each other again in the end of the episode.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that gets resolved at some point.
Yeah. One thing we always resolve is the Priority One inbox, Ben. You want to see if we have anything over there?
Let's do it.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Adam, we have a couple of Priority One messages here. The first one is from Curtis, and it is to Lisa. Goes like this. Thanks for going with me to the last Greatest Gen Con show in San Francisco.
Wow.
It was fun to meet Ben and Adam with you, even though you were only present as a picture of yourself rolling your eyes and pointing a phaser at your head. P.S. Thanks, Uncle, for the papier-mâché Spock hand doing the Vulcan salute. Please come take your sticker down.
I got to say, a papier-mâché Spock salute hand.
It's papier-mâché.
Papier-mâché.
This is a P-A-P-I-E-R, which is pronounced papier.
I think that's a creepy thing to have around. Just a disembodied hand? I can't get with that. That's gross.
Yeah. Come take your sticker down.
Yeah. Get that sticker down, too. Ben, the second Priority One message we have here is from Sam, high-priced Starfleet consultant. It is for Captain Adam and Acting Ensign Brad.
Oh, no, I know who this is.
Message goes like this. You are two of the finest officers I've served with on this starship called Life, Adam. Your heart and command decisions remind me of Sisko and what it is to do the work we do. Acting Ensign Brad, your ability to travel the galaxy with me, put on pants and not kill me like Arma speaks to your capacity to love others. Like a Dax loves its host body. Wow. Sam, Adam, and Brad, all three close friends of DeSoto and real-life friends of ours.
Yeah. Some great young gentlemen.
Doing the good work.
Yeah.
As we speak.
I like that Brad has been promoted to acting ensign. He used to just be the boy.
Yeah. Jeez. Like a Dax loves a toast body.
Yeah.
You know how a Dax loves a toast body, Ben?
How?
Like going up in there.
Yeah, getting up in them guts.
Well, if you want to get up in our Priority One messages, you can do that over at MaximumFun.org/Jobotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200. They keep this program going, Ben, every single week.
Thank you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Oh, God.
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda.
That is so corny. Don't do that again.
That's two episodes in a row, man. It's going to be a thing. You're stuck with it. You keep doing that weird beard thing at the end of DS9. I'm gonna take this one.
Yeah, but that's like corny intentionally.
You don't think I'm being intentional?
I don't know. I suspect otherwise. My drunk Shimoda is Michael Burnham for having a mind as dirty as ours. at the end of that first mycelial jump, Captain Pike is like clearly creamed his jeans, and Saru says, "You never forget your first," and they just cut to a little reaction on Michael Burnham where it's clear that she has interpreted that in the sexual way that I did. So I really liked that the show knew that that's how that would read, and also that Saru didn't know that that's how that would read. So it was funny and good. Did you have a drunk Shimoda?
This is a show that really likes its reaction shots, huh?
Sure does.
I'm going to give my drunk Shimoda to Jacob, who I'm like, he knows what a grenade does, obviously, but he has to have so few of them that to use one in this moment, I feel like, is sort of an insane move.
Yeah, very precious thing.
He can't be sure that this isn't going to kill them, right? Like, how many grenades could he have? Is he like going out into the woods and detonating one just to see what happens? His knowledge of this device is the thing that gives me pause. And his intent to use it without knowing its full capabilities is what makes him my drunk Shimoda. Like, that kind of seems like that's really pegging the needle in that moment, Jacob.
Yeah, seriously.
Careful with that grenade. Well, this has been a good time for me, Ben. I love that Star Trek Discovery is back. Ben, you got to tell me what's coming up on the next episode of Star Trek Discovery.
Well, we got a little edited package, and it looks like this is going to feature Klingons with hair, Ash Tyler, and probably Section 31 Evil Georgiou.
You know, I've been considering getting a vasectomy recently, and like the one name for that that isn't is an edited package. That's what they should call that procedure.
Yeah, get your package edited, Adam. All right, we'll leave it there. We'll let Rob take it from here. Thanks for listening.
We'll let Rob save the show from us at this point.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast hosted by Adam Pranica and Ben Harrison. The show's produced and edited by me, Rob Schulte, and our theme music and interstitials are by Adam Ragusea. You can support this show by heading on over to MaximumFun.org/donate or by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. When using social media, please use the hashtag GreatestDiscovery or GreatestGen. You can find Ben on Twitter at BenjaminAHR. Adam is at CutForTime. And I'm at Rob K. Schulte. Thanks, we'll see you next week.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.